obstacle, a real hurdle for people who are in the country and they're undocumented. And I always want people to understand that someone's documentation status does not mean that they don't have basic human rights to healthcare. And it's just extremely distressing to see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. I will say that we in Arizona have some practical support organizations. There's a lot of community support to help all people seeking abortion get the care they need, but there are some specific interests in making sure that our undocumented sisters get the care that they need. And also, too, what we're seeing is an increase in self-managed abortion through herbal remedies and other types of things, as well as misoprostol only, has been increasing over the course of time just because of all the restrictions that already existed in Arizona.
Dr. Deshaun Taylor, we want to thank you so much for being with us. OBGYN physician, abortion provider, owner of Desert Star Family Planning in Phoenix, Arizona, only Black-owned independent abortion provider in Arizona. Her upcoming book, Undue Burden, a Black Woman Physician on Being Christian and Pro-Abortion in the Reproductive Justice Movement. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
And you are listening to more talk radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7, 104.3, 91.3, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. Today is the 10th of April. We are broadcasting live, and I am Cecil Prescott, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Celeste Carey. And we welcome all of you as we begin this here in Portland. Spring is arriving, with rain, of course, and at some point in time, nice, warm, sunny weather will be a part of our environment, but that is not the case right now. Having heard this broadcast on the broadcast of the program just prior to this, Democracy Now!, we heard a very disturbing, enlightening interview, as well as investigation into the changing landscape of the American political scene as in terms of reproductive rights. It's challenging, and it reminds all of us that we are living in a time where we have to continue to struggle for what our ancestors, generations before us, struggled for and thought the battles were won. I saw a segment on a news program a few days ago where this older woman was talking, reflecting on her participation in the struggle for women's rights to choose in the 1960s and 50s and 60s, and how the struggle that they were a part of, how it made her weep that the progress had so quickly, in some sense, but as this prior program reminded us, it is part of an ongoing process to to stop the advancement of freedom for individuals. And so the struggle continues. This morning, we wanted to take another perspective on that in terms of the struggles that we are encountering in our society. We are all aware of what is happening in our school boards, in this state and throughout the nation, around and also in the libraries, where we see a movement to prevent the free access to books and to read. So Celeste and I thought that we would have a program this morning where we would challenge all of us. I'll let Celeste introduce it a little bit better than I can introduce it, because I've been trying to come up with my list.
Huh? With a list of books?
Yeah.
Well, you know what was really interesting, if you were listening to Amy, she happened to mention that an associate who he claims is the best friend of his, of Clarence Thomas, had the book Mein Kampf.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. Why are you concerned about that? Mm-hmm. You know, and people will say, well, I'm sure it indicates something unsavory about this particular person, because why would you want that book? That book is a no-no. We don't want that book in people's consciousness. And it tied lovely, in a lovely fashion with our topic, which is, and we're doing kind of like a devil's advocate thing on here. Books. Banning books. Now, you hear about this a lot in the news, and in February, and I think it was in January perhaps, but definitely in February, I attended it was worldwide via Zoom, presentation, two different ones, on Toni Morrison's books. Mm-hmm. And the fact that in some states like Florida, books such as hers, which chronicle people's lived experience or just articulate a narrative about ways in which people may have their lives constricted and impressed, et cetera, or have experienced something that they think is transformative, those books have been considered dangerous, bad,
threatening,
deleterious to health, you know, and thinking. And so they've been banned. And so, you know, listening to those presentations about Toni Morrison's work and knowing some of her work from having read it, I got to thinking, well, why are we banning or not banning books? And I thought, well, this would be a great topic for us to talk about. Ban books. Would you ban books or no? And if you decide to ban books, why are you banning? And just give one or two books. And you got to do this in 2 minutes or less, because we hope to get a lot of people in. You know, so I know a lot of you are deep thinkers and you wax, philosophical and poetic. But, you know, try to be kind of brief and call us at 503-231-8187 and tell us, would you ban books? If so, which books and why? You know, and I got to thinking when we were talking about it, I listed three books just off the top of my head, you know, and I have read lots of books I should and lots of books I shouldn't. And some of those books I read at a young, tender age that I really should not have read. And I snuck. Because I'm a human being, you know, and people, you know, my father would let us read lots. Both of my parents were deep readers. So, you know, but they told us what we could and couldn't read, and they explained why.
Sure. I remember one of my nice memories when I think I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad took me to the library. And I was so excited because I got my library card.
Mm-hmm.
And it became somewhat of a tradition in our household that every Saturday we would walk to the library, and I think at that point you would limit it to 10 books. So each one of us children, we got our books, and we went home and read the books. And part of the things we are hearing now are concerns from parents about the influence of certain books in their children may read, mm-hmm. and what it is that they are required to read in school. A couple of thoughts that came to my mind is one that certainly parents have a right and a responsibility to be involved in their children's education, and also that we have a responsibility to broaden our children's perspective and to be engaged with our children and with those around us, so that it isn't so out of the blue that a teacher picks Lady Chatterley's Lover for your second grader to read. That's not going to happen.
Why?
And all things are appropriate at certain point in time. And, one of the books we talked about was Catcher in the Rye. And mm-hmm. so for every adolescent child, when I was growing up, we all had to read it. And for me, it was in junior high school, and I believe, middle school. I think I was in eighth grade. And it was sort of like, wow, what is this I'm reading?
Mm-hmm.
And I was such a, kind of nerdy type person that I felt embarrassed when we had to stand up to read selections in the school. But a point that I'm making is that certainly books are a way in which we can broaden our perspective, and if you are involved in your children's education and conversations, and know what they are reading, it can be an enlightening and broadening. And there's always that time when you say, oh, I'm going to read something that's really dirty, and or something that's really will widen my perspective or something like that. And I confess that occasionally I pick up one of those books and I thought I was reading it and I had no idea what it was talking about. But, I read that. Oh, that book.
Okay. So what was this effect on your mind?
Oh, my mind is it's cabbage now because all of that.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, let me give the phone number again before we launch off into some of the other aspects of our topic today. It's 503-231-8187. And, of course, some people are sitting out there thinking, I know you're not talking about banning books, Cecil and Celeste. That's such a slippery slope. But to be perfectly honest, there are things in every area of our life that we ban or we allow. We do exercise some measure of discrimination over things and discernment over things. And so it is not as catastrophic and authoritarian and I'm going to say a whole different thing. I'm going to say fascist and just leave it like that.
Okay, yeah.
as banning books. But, it's good to talk about this because when you encounter people whose ideals are different from yours, you have a reasoned narrative to share. You have reasoned thoughts to articulate. And if you're really savvy and honest, like I said, you recognize that sometimes it's not a matter of banning, as Cecil had indicated, but it's a matter of delaying until you're at a state of, or the person is at a state of development where they can appreciate it.
Right.
So,
and I think most people would agree with that, that sentiment. At least on the surface,
mm-hmm.
until it's like my child.
Hello.
One thing that I've noticed is sort of like this if you have attended any school board meetings where the subject of books come up, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of people waiting to testify, and there's lots of strong disagreement or argument going back and forth. And I think that it says something more than the individual text that people are talking about. And for me, it's people sense a loss of control, whatever that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems easier just to attack the school board because I heard that they might allow my 8-year-old read this text that I don't want them to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sense in which parents, adults, feel a loss of control, even, or loss of able to protect. That's a word that is often used,
mm-hmm.
to protect our children.
It, you know, and that's a profound, we should never discount that, regardless of whether we call ourselves progressive, liberal, conservative, Republican, whatever. The thing is a lot of people feel this deep moral sense, this deep visceral sense of responsibility to protect their children from any kind of perceived danger. And that makes it really, it makes it a really hair trigger response in many cases. You know, you got this visceral response, which is why you see some of these folks really acting out at some of these meetings. And I know how I have been, you know, when things endangered my daughter. So there you go, you know, or my grandkids.
Right. And mm-hmm. and it continues. Given that, at the same time, I think we all know and are encouraged by the opportunities that we had as children or young people, and that our children or those we love have by widening our perspectives. So it isn't that, and also so much of the rhetoric you hear right now is tied to a movement
mm-hmm.
that is, I think, using people's natural, for lack of a better term, parental, that's mm-hmm. a better word, parental sense. And they threaten or frighten parents by creating understand their innermost thought, but by creating a narrative which makes it imperative for parents to say, oh no, I have to speak out because my child is in danger. Interestingly enough, a lot of those books that people are protesting address issues that are off of the mainstream in terms of, well, for the, you know, white middle class America. So you have people raising a lot over, you mentioned Toni Morrison's
mm-hmm.
Book. And I'm saying, well, what is it about Toni Morrison? Is that about? You have lots of people these days talking about, oh, the 1619 Project. Like, they mm-hmm. have any idea what that is. But also, I don't want my children to feel bad about themselves.
Well, you know, one of the main ways you help your children not feel bad about themselves is to build them up on a factual basis of what they do well and help them deal with what they don't do well, and don't sugarcoat it, but also expose them to other perspectives and teach them how to reflect your family's values while navigating this difference among us. You know, this, what is the word I'm looking for? It escapes me right now, but it has to do with being a multicultural, multi-perspective environment. And so, you know, this is where this reminds me of a conversation we had some months ago, some weeks ago, where we were talking about, I think it was somebody had brought up this issue about having their kids attend like drag programs at the library, or no, drag queens reading books at the library or something to that effect. And the guy was very astute. He says, well, it's kind of age appropriate. And I said, yeah, I feel you on that. We all have things that we should be watching and looking at whether our children are astute enough to understand, you know, mature enough to understand. He said, yeah. You know, and we both kind of chuckled and said, well, why would you take your kids to Hooters? You know, they say it's a family restaurant now. You know, my whole point is I got an issue because it objectifies, you know, women's bodies. And it kind of diminishes the beauty and mystique of sex. You know, we're such a puritanical country because we have these weird twisted ideas about what it is and isn't. And so then you're going to take your 3 and 5 year old, you know, children to see this, but you don't want them to read Charlotte Webb, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, right. Where's the sense in that? And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, a conversation like this is really important, because it helps people start thinking, well, wait a minute. And me, I'm thinking, what? You mean Charlotte Webb was banned? Now, even though it had talking animals, it wasn't quite my cup of tea, but, you know, I had to read it, so I did. One of my best friends still loves
Charlotte Webb?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, love the characters. Mm-hmm. Especially the little pig.
So what are certain books or challenges that you face, either as a parent or a teacher? What are ways in which you negotiate, or do you negotiate? And what are your thoughts on the move to ban book, or to prevent the free access to information? Give us a call here at 503-231-8187 and let us know your thoughts. Are there 3 books that were banned that you could not read, or that you wanted to read?
Or 2 books, or 1.
Or 1 book.
Yeah, you know. And you know, I'm kind of chuckling. I said, people kind of scared to touch this subject. And I'm wondering why, you know. Is it because, like I said earlier, you perceive it to be a slippery slope? But this is the world we live in. And by not looking at these dynamics and these movements and these concepts with some degree of critical analysis of what they actually pose and how they affect you and people in your environment, in your sphere of environment, you leave yourself kind of open to, I'm going to say it, to visceral manipulation. That's my phrase for it anyway. Why do I call it visceral manipulation? Well, as you recall, some time ago, I think it was at the beginning of COVID, I shared an article Cecil and I talked about, and that was the whole idea of being kept in a state of agitation and anger, mm-hmm. and anxiety, you know, and being irate makes you much more easier to control.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier when you're all antsy instead of just like chill.
Yeah.
But let's see what some of our listeners have to say. Let's go to our first caller. Good morning. Oops. We lost you.
Call back. Having a little bit of technical challenges this morning. Bear with us. We are still, however, your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, in the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3, and of course on the web, www.kboo.fm, here on More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste.
One of the challenges I see is how people are manipulated. You mm-hmm. mentioned it. But first of all, any parent, has access to teachers, to the curriculum, and, teachers long for parental involvement to participate in your child's education, but part of it is allowing your child to enter into new mm-hmm. areas of information, and that's part of what learning is. Now, certainly, if we believe that parents and teachers are engaged with a common interest to educate, to uplift our children, then we can engage with them, and it's not as teachers against parents or
mm-hmm.
The administration against teachers, but it's sort of like, how can we as a community build and encourage? Part of the challenge, I think, is that parents are generally, some parents are generally afraid as the larger changing environment. And so the immediate response might be, oh my gosh, I have to go and protect my child from what they are getting in terms of mm-hmm. information in the school. Now, okay, I started to go off on a whole other thing about information in school.
I can appreciate that. And like I said, bear with us as we try to get our phones operative here. And don't give up calling for us. Here's something I want to say, and this might really kind of rankle a few people, is the whole idea of book banning doesn't just originate from conservative areas. It also originates from progressive areas. And so that's one reason why I think it's really important for us to talk. Okay, and again, I'm going to say this because we just said it. A lot of progressive people do not like the idea of the book Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler being out in circulation. It was just mentioned in Democracy Now!, which was fortuitous for us. And so, there are books that any particular sector of society just doesn't like. So let's consider that, and think about, okay, what, let me ask you a question here, Cecil. Think and share one book that maybe you could... Okay, excellent. Let's go to our caller, Lee. We've got been able to get through. Good morning, Lee. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
I'm repairing books.
Okay, wait a minute, Lee. Hold on. Slow down. Just start all over again because we just got you potted up.
Okay. I used to do volunteer work at a library repairing books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have some, conversations with the librarians on staff and, overhear discussions. And one of the issues about, quote, having, quote, banned books or unacceptable books in libraries, there were three things going on. One, people would check them out
mm-hmm.
and then never return them.
Mm.
People would steal them.
Mm.
And that other people would, and I don't know if you've been in libraries or done research in libraries, but if a book is out of place in a different location in the library, not where its call number is, it's almost impossible to find, and people would move them around and put them out of place.
Hmm. Wow.
And there's one other thing that I ran into, is I'm interested in mushrooms, and I looked at one of the better books on mushrooms and found out that certain pages of a dealing with psychedelic mushrooms had been cut out from the book done by librarians.
Mm. Well, how do you know that it was done by librarians? That's
they
I'm
told
curious.
Me.
Oh, wow.
They told me that they did that because of the danger that of somebody trying to find those mushrooms. And what I said is maybe it's dangerous if people eat a mushroom that's improperly identified because it's not in the book.
I wondered, because you raised the issue in a different perspective in terms of how books are banned unofficially by the library. And please, for people who are listening, I confess that I often take books out of the library and I keep renewing them. It's not because I don't want anyone else not to read them. It's just because... Just because I don't get around to reading them on time,
and you can't afford to buy all those books yourself.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Lee, that is fascinating in terms of what's happening. Yeah. Exactly. I hadn't thought of
it. And it's an unofficial censorship, and you know people need to be aware of it because thank you for the program.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Bye bye. So, you know, that I think is a solid illustration of why we, instead of perhaps banning books, we might want to think about age-appropriate knowledge. But I'm going to flip it on its head because I said we're going to be controversial with our approach today. Bomb making. Why do we need to know how to make a bomb? Unless we're munitions, you know, expert or employee, why does the average person need that knowledge? Now, somebody could say, well, what if I'm studying to be a munitions expert? You know, maybe I want to go into demolition and to be able to environmentally safely bring down, you know, buildings. Wouldn't I need to learn this? Well, you would learn it in school. Well, what about extra credit reading for the average person? You know, well, that's up to debate.
Because
I'm thinking of Kaczynski.
Let me ask, well, then who decides in terms of which books to ban in terms of bomb making? Is it the library staff, the individual librarian who goes hides a book in the back of a shelf? Is it the library board which examine? It's again, it's something we mentioned. It's sort of like a slippery slope.
Slippery slope.
And how do you decide and discern what's appropriate or not appropriate? And
well, for who, though? Now, are we talking about for ourselves as adults or for kids? Because a lot of book banning, in some instances, is about not misshaping the young, you know, malleable mind. And then other episodes of censorship. And censorship in itself is not bad. I'm going to say something that's probably going to freak a lot of folks out, but every radio station, every TV station, every newspaper in this country, every magazine censors something. Now, it's only when the government censors something that it's against the law. But every individual organization, media organization, does practice censorship. There's certain things they will not allow on the air. So, to get back to what you were saying, should it be determined by whether it's age appropriate or not? Or, like you're saying, if you are going to ban it, who's going to ban it? Well, somebody call us up and tell us who.
503-231-8187. Age appropriate. Who decides what is age appropriate? And age appropriate for, you know, I was with a bunch of children.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching. I was teaching a class of students.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. Because I saw that look on your face, like, wait a minute, where is this going?
Okay. And while teaching this class, you know, I look around and there's students who are
different ages.
They were more or less the same age. Six to eight, but in terms of where they were in
developmentally.
Stages. So mm-hmm. some things are more appropriate for, you know,
a 6 year old but not an eight. Or some, vice versa.
Or some 6 years mm-hmm. old and not other 6 years mm-hmm. old.
So, right. Well, see, and that's why parents feel like they have the upper hand on this, because they know the kids. But let's go to our next caller. Is Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you. Thank you for the conversation. I had a friend who actually had a quote 20 years ago, and I really like it. He says, World War III is an information war, and there is no distinction between civilian and soldier. And I thought it was very astute at the time, and I think it's kind of proved itself out. And as far as libraries concerned, I'm all over them, because I think it's our last vestige of free speech and collaboration and communication and stuff. My wife was a librarian for like 18 years and down on the coast, and she started all the children's programs and reading to the kindergarten kids and all that kind of stuff. And so I think all of that is immensely, immensely important. And I read to the kindergarten kids because I'm 70 years old and stuff and retired and things like that. But I think the more that people can go out and give people the information that they need to survive, because this world is changing, and it's changing very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so people need to know how to adapt. And right now, libraries and things like that that allow communication, KBOO is, God, if you guys knew what you have done for all of Oregon and what Powell's has done for Portland itself, you know, I mean, all of these things are effects and they've formed us I think it'll be all right. I think information wants to be free.
All right.
I think it wants to be out there. So anyway, I love you guys. You guys carry on. Sorry for talking so much.
No problem. No problem. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I wonder, you know, as he talked about his wife in terms of librarian and also his activity, is I'd like to hear people's stories about what it is like to read. What it's like when you remember that a book you said, oh my gosh, I just have to read it, and you read it every night, you know, under your
under blanket. The blankets with the flashlight. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I do hear what he says. Information wants to be free. But then, you know, and I wish we had a two-hour show. You hear me saying that from time to time. Because I would like to get at, well, that's not what we totally believe. Because I'm going to go back again. I mean, there are other examples. But this was just mentioned an hour ago. Why was the reporter so upset that Clarence Thomas, major donor, had a Nazi memorial site, niche in his home, and had copies of Mein Kampf?
I think it was also about the relationship between Supreme Court justice with this donor to
But they use that as an indication of as a major character flaw.
Yeah, well,
the possession of that particular piece of information.
Well, it wasn't just
I know, I know, it was all of the stuff. Yeah. But I'm just pointing that out as a salient fact here. But let's go to our next caller. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Francis. I am tickled. I don't know if that's the right word. When I hear them talking about how some of these books will make
certain children feel bad about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my children are Irish, African American, and when my eldest son was probably in fifth grade, I got a call from the school because he put a big X on a picture in the history book, the U.S. history book, mm-hmm. that they've been using for years. And the picture was a drawing in maybe the two pages they dedicated to slavery and Reconstruction. And it was of a drawing of a black man cowering in the corner while this man in a top hat was whipping him.
Mm-hmm.
And my son became angered with that picture. And I thought, is that the only representation of that era in our history that these children are going to be able to see or talk about? That was wrong, and it is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for the Multnomah County Library, because I ended up with all of my children. My youngest, he went to parochial school for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
until third grade, and he actually got most of the fundamentals there. But my kids got tired of daily dealing with negative expectations from administrators and teachers and people who were supposed to be there to teach them. So I ended up homeschooling all of them. And my daughter thanks me every day for turning her on to the Central Library, because that's where she got her education and her information. And I feel bad that people are still stuck in this fear of telling the truth.
So let me ask you, as a parent who's been involved, is there any one book that you would ban, just out of curiosity? And this is not like a non-judgmental thing, because, like I said, all of us have something that we would ban.
I don't know of any book that I would ban.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like you were saying, bomb making is kind of silly to me. Why that even needs to be out there? And that's another thing. Why we are concerned about books in school when the internet has everything?
Well, hello, yeah. Hello.
Good access. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, I feel that it's the educator's responsibility to give children a well-rounded education, and if they discuss current events or politics or history, that they tell the truth.
Well, see, and this was where the challenge lies, because one of the reasons that, say, something like, okay, here's a book that was recently written, The Hate U Give. There was a movie made about mm-hmm. it. Okay, this young woman is chronicling a story. Okay, mm-hmm. if that was her life lived experience and she was sharing it, somebody would say, well, that's making me look bad. So I don't want to share that.
Why is that making you look bad?
There you go. You get into the crux of it. Those are the kinds of questions we need to be asking. You hit the nail right on the head.
They need to acknowledge that it happened,
mm-hmm.
and realize that maybe there's some reparations that need to be made.
And what went into the dynamics of that really adversarial, you know, encounter in the first place? You know, and we won't talk about that. So, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Frances. Thank you.
All right, then. You guys take care.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking about censorship, parental responsibility, libraries. What should or should not be read?
Freedom of information, information's right to be spread, and banning books.
I was interesting in that last conversation with Frances, and she mentioned, you know, almost in passing, as you know, we're focused on books, 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 books,
mm-hmm.
and sort of like it's not like information can only be accessed to walk into a half a mile to a library and open in a book. It's on your kid's phone.
Well, and that was the other thing, you know. And, you know, I wasn't ignoring it. I wanted to try to do a laser focus on the tangible manifestation, you know, the book, you know, because it has a symbolic effect, you know, the banning of books. And I remember reading that Plato was so incensed with one of his adversaries, his political adversaries, that he tried to ban all of his books. And I want to say his name was Democritus, but Democritus, I think that's right. I don't have my big computer in front of me, but he didn't succeed, but you know, a lot of his students did, so that now you can find Plato's books, but you can't find his adversary's books. So Plato is regarded by many people as one of the pillars of our Western philosophical rationale for doing almost anything we've done, whether it be music or economy or philosophy or governance, you know? And so this goes back to something else we talked about. You know, if somebody you admire does something wrong, what does that mean about, you know, their work? But anyway, let's go to our next caller.
Good morning. Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have kind of a funny thought about banned books, and I thought I would suggest that maybe we should ban the Bible. Well, not just any Bible. I would keep the King James, but I would ban the New American and the New International because I say the translations are inaccurate. The one that comes to mind first to me is the Thou Shalt Not Lie. That's in the New American. That's not lie. But in the King James, it's Thou Shalt Not Bear False Witness, which is a broader interpretation. You can mislead people to believe lies without technically lying.
Oh, there's lies of omission.
Lies of omission. Half-truths. Half-truths. So if we were talking about banning books that are misleading, you could say that that's a quote from the New American and the New International about not lying. If you have to lie to protect someone, something, yourself, go ahead and lie.
Well,
but if you're deceiving others, if your intention is deceive, or if you think you're telling the truth but you were misled and you're just spreading a lie, a falsehood. So, okay,
I'll
think about that.
Hold on.
I thought when you mentioned the Bible, and I said, oh, you know, that's probably good, because I thought you were going to talk about the violence and the sex and the rapes and the
murder and all that
in the Bible.
No, I was thinking more along the lines of in a court of law where you have to swear the oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The half truth, the telling of half truth, that happens in courts of law. And so along the lines that if you have to swear on a Bible in a court of law, you should do it on the King James.
Okay.
There you go.
Good day. All right. You know, here's the thing, though. First, I wanted to say something about, you know, the telling a lie to save somebody. That's still an intent to deceive. So we shouldn't sugarcoat it, you know. Deception is deception. Now, again, you might say, okay, what was the intention behind it? Okay. You know, but people actually have moved to ban the Bible and say it's all this stuff in there that we don't want in society. And, you know, when Cecil and I are talking, I said, yeah, you know, kind of like Lord of the Flies, huh? You know, somebody tried to ban that, you get upset, you know. And the thing about the Bible, people, you know, if we're going to talk about intent, as our last caller raised, that's not advocating. The Bible's not advocating you do those things. It just points out these are the faults and foibles of people.
Jesus, what a piece of junk.
Um, So, you know, I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, okay, is there any way you could spin it to make that be in context, the last caller's comments? Yeah. It's like, nah, but, you know, we just need to make sure it doesn't go out with profanity. Hey, and see, that's censorship, you know? Right. You know, we have to exercise a measure of censorship.
That's
but
right.
It's 8:48. And we got roughly 10 minutes for conversation. And so, you know, we're at that point where we try to tell our callers, we love you, but you can't talk long. You know, you got to make your point quickly. But we do want to encourage people to call. And this is a subject maybe we'll come back and visit again, you know, maybe from a slightly different perspective. But this whole idea, if you were going to ban a book, would you? What would the book be and why would you ban it?
Yeah, and what are the reasons?
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting. Again, our numbers are 503-231-81.
You got the same caller, not the last one.
8-7.
Okay.
And is this Francis again?
Yeah, I forgot to tell you something. Sorry.
Well, Francis, we got other people in the hopper, and I love you dearly, but I want to give them a shot.
Okay. Dr. Dre and Public Enemy helped my eldest son put everything in perspective.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Oh, no. Okay. There
Public,
we go.
Public Enemy is the soundtrack of my life.
I got a chance to actually meet Chuck D. I have an autograph somewhere for a book of his. He's the one that actually turned me on to another book we'll talk about another time.
Well, I was so thrilled that, like, Chuck D's follows me, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, he was kind of cool to hang with, you know.
Wow.
And Public Enemy had a concert here, and then we went and hung out with some of the crew later on. And, you know, I'm an old head now, so saying that I hung out with people like, say, Sorry Evora or Les Nubian or, you know, Public Enemy, that doesn't mean anything, you know, now to young folks. Let's go to our next caller, James. Good morning.
Good morning. So good to hear you guys and be able to call in.
Thank you.
I always ask who's doing the censoring and about whom. And many times I feel like with those with positions of authority or power look to censor those marginalized groups who are seeking to recognize their own dignity and authority within their own lives. And that, to me, is a good barometer if the censoring is doing damage or harm in our communities. So, anyway, I just felt like that was something that I use as a barometer.
Well, I think that's a good pillar to base it on, and that helps us look at why we might want to ban certain books. Are those books and that piece of information conversely damaging to a group? Just like, is the censorship damaging to a group? And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Who's in control?
100%. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so often, when people are advocating even for free speech, there isn't an acknowledgement about if what the person is saying is bringing harm. And they may be a comedian, for example, or a politician. And in the argument for free speech, I wish there was a larger narrative about collective good, collective harm.
Right.
Hello.
Yes.
And what?
The lifting up of this of free speech or any sort of like individualism as the ultimate.
How does it edify?
It raises those type of questions in terms of community good. I often tell people I'm, you know, want to focus on what's the community good. And so this sense of individualism is dangerous when we don't have the collective good in as central. But that's how I operate.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Guys, you're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
You too. You know, and again, to edify what our caller James just said, you know, it's about accountability. And if we're going to ban a book, these are, you know, some of the principles he mentioned are some of the reasons why we might consider it. How does it affect a group of people? Does it nourish and nurture and uplift and edify? Because if it doesn't, you know, then maybe it should be banned. You know, maybe there is knowledge we don't need. But here's, you know, another way of looking at this. Nowadays, people get all bent out of shape if you call them out. But, you know, I have this quote I want to say. Accountability feels like an attack when you're not ready to acknowledge how your behavior hurts others. And so when a lot of these people are getting bent out of shape because they're called to account, it's like, yo, quit it. You're damaging other folks.
We have Terry.
All righty. Let's see if we got time for another call. Good morning. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi. I tried to get a book from the library, and it may be because very few books were published because they couldn't find a publisher, couldn't afford to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
by Elana Freeland. She published it in 2014 together with Feral House.
So are you saying this book should or shouldn't be banned?
It should be. It should not be banned.
Okay.
We need to know what our government is doing with the climate.
Okay.
All over the world, that it can, chemtrails versus contrails, how extreme weather is being geoengineered.
Right.
To enrich disaster capitalists and intimidate nature. Nation.
Alrighty. Well, thank you for that information.
We want it available to everyone.
Okay.
So they can figure out what's going on.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
And you know, I don't want it to sound like I'm relegating this to fringe. I'm not, because we have about a week ago how I think it was China or somebody was doing some seeding to keep it from raining during the Olympics or something along those lines. So who knows? But you were going to say?
Oh, I forgot.
I'm sorry. You're sorry.
So, yeah, what books do you read? What books do you not read? What books do
would
you
ban?
Would you ban? If you
any.
Were, if any. And in terms of why? Why are some books acceptable and some are not? And in terms of how do we arrange our community, what lifts up the community? But also, you know, we have some books that challenge the community. And just because it upsets us or it goes counter to our opinion, does that mean we should not include that book? Does it create greater harm or not? But we have a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can get this.
Okay, we got about a minute and a half, Harry.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Well, yeah, there's two books that should be banned. The first one, the first one is the Kama Sutra, which should be kind of restricted to adults only. The second one is that should be banned is Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham, and in this book, 13 times. Sam claims to be God. Sam, I am.
Okay.
So I think it's a blasphemy, and that book should be banned.
Okay.
Excellent. I assume there's some tongue in cheek here, but
yes.
Okay. Right.
I did assume as well. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Sam, I am.
Well, he did say it. You know.
That's right. It is blasphemous.
Well, I mean, but is he not Sam?
I am.
I am not Sam. Okay. You know, but and there you go. It's the context, the intention, you know, the environment, the edification or lack thereof are all basis for looking at how we create, share, use information, i.e. books. Oh. And so, you know, the thought is as we go through our day, we do discern, we do discriminate. But the question then is, who are we hurting when we make these decisions? How are we helping when we make these decisions? And as one of our callers, James, said, and as others indicated, you need to look at how you're using this information and make sure it's in an age-appropriate fashion. And then as an adult, you need to look at how is this helping or hurting? What are you going to say, Cecil?
I was going to say, go to the library and read.
Or go on the internet and read, but read indeed.
And read indeed.
Well, we want to thank everybody for calling in, and stay tuned. We have coming up the Old Mo Variety Hour at 9 o'clock. This has been More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Now, I wanted to thank our engineer.
Yes, thank you, Ender.
Amen.
Ender. Yes.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. Celeste and I will join you next time.
Yes.
Still have 30 seconds, but...
Usually we go out of our theme music. Well, with that, well, I'll just say be sure to stay tuned and check our webpage because we have our bluegrass t-shirt available. Where? At KBOO.FM. Look at our banner. Don't forget to support us because we're strong when you work with us to be strong and share information.
Yeah, thank you so much for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tomwater, Wetlala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shwaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia, many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the